Hello, my name is Brian Ivashelsky, and I'm an associate editor with Drug Topics. Today, I'm joined by Jenny Markell, a PhD student of health and public policy at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Welcome and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Awesome. So Jenny has conducted extensive research on the topic and is joining us today to discuss misinformation and drug advertising. So Jenny, to start us off, can you give us an example of how drug advertising may misinform potential consumers?
Yeah, so just to start off, so under FDA guidelines, pharmaceutical companies are supposed to provide a balanced view of drugs in advertising in terms of their risks and benefits, and they're supposed to avoid any misleading information. And so it's illegal, for example, to overstate a drug's benefits, misrepresent data from studies, or make claims that are not supported by adequate evidence. And so there are some examples actually on the FDA website of misleading information and misinformation that should not be included in advertisements. So this could be something like having the benefits in a much larger font than the risks when they're supposed to be balanced. It could be something like showing an image of a child during an advertisement when the drug is actually only approved for adults. So in that case, you know, the consumer by seeing the child would assume that it's approved for that child, but in reality, it wouldn't be. And then finally, another example would be showing an off-label use of a drug. So an example of that is if a drug is approved for something like allergy symptoms. And then the process is that if the FDA confirms this to be true, they can notify the drug manufacturer in a letter. But there's research that shows they've sent very few of those letters overall. And there have been a few penalties enforced in lawsuits that the FDA has won over illegal information that's displayed in these advertisements that might be misleading. But again, I wouldn't say that that's the norm. And so that just gives you a sense, hopefully, of, you know, some of the misleading information that could be included in advertisements.
Awesome. Yeah. I feel like at the end of the day, it's the FDA is that authority. Kind of got to look to the FDA to make sure that checks and balances, you're doing everything right. But one of the most common trends you've presented in your research is that a majority of advertising for top selling prescription drugs in the US is for those with low added benefits for patients. So obviously that's very interesting. Can you elaborate on this? Basically, why don't advertisers target higher cost drugs that at least have some benefit?
Yeah, so we did this study, which was led by my colleague, Mike DiStefano. Given the growth in direct-to-consumer advertising in the past couple decades, and because of the continued public attention to it, since, you know, we always see those ads on TV, and it's really only legal in the US and New Zealand. It's not legal in other countries. And so in this study, we wanted to understand in the US, what are the characteristics of these drugs that are being advertised on TV and in other places? And so, as you said, we did this study that was descriptive, looking at the 150 top-selling branded drugs in the U.S. in 2020. And we found that the average spending on this direct-to-consumer advertising out of all promotional spending was higher for drugs with lower added benefit. And so essentially what that means, the U.S. doesn't have this added benefit system that some other countries have. And so we mapped on the systems of France and Canada from their health technology agencies, and they take into account several criteria to determine this ranking of added benefit from low to major or low to high added benefit that compare this new drug to an existing treatment that's already on the market. And so in finding that association between more spending and lower added benefit, I think there's a few reasons why we might be seeing these drug companies advertise those drugs. First, there's some research that shows that direct-to-consumer advertising of drugs might increase patient requests for these drugs and also the likelihood that they're going to be prescribed by doctors. And so if we're seeing more spending on these drugs, it could, in terms of their advertising, it could be a marketing strategy to increase prescriptions of those drugs and increase demand for those drugs. And one other reason for that is it could be that this new drug, you know, it has some similar competitors already on the market, but it might be more high cost. It might, you know, not have as good formulary placement. And so because of that, it might be advertised more compared to, you know, lower cost alternatives. And so I think that was something worrying we found in this study that was very interesting.
With the you're finding that higher cost drugs are being spent on more and also having less benefit. Other than that, are there other notable trends that you've seen in prescription advertising that you think people should kind of know about?
Yeah, so we did another study recently that was focusing kind of on a different side of advertising that was looking specifically at Alzheimer's disease drugs. And that was really because in recent years, we've seen a couple of new drugs on the market for Alzheimer's disease. And we've also seen some concern about those drugs in terms of the severe side effects that they can have. And so for this example in the study that we did, we wanted to understand how black box warnings affect consumer perception of drugs. And essentially, a black box warning is exactly what it sounds like. It's a literal black box on a label that puts this severe warning. In this case, it was brain swelling or bleeding, which you might imagine is a pretty severe adverse effect from this drug. So we wanted to understand how that would affect consumer perception and preference for the drug. And that's because currently, though there, as I said before, needs to be that benefit of risks and benefits in these advertisements, there's no requirement that these severe adverse effects be prominently displayed in a certain way. And so we wanted to understand how prominently displaying those ads would affect these consumer perceptions. And so we did a study where we randomly assigned participants to be seeing different advertisements with different displays of this information. We also included both qualitative and quantitative displayed, so either actual numbers from these studies that showed, X out of X people experienced this side effect or this benefit to understand how that also affected the information. And that quantitative information is recommended by the FDA, but it's not required. And so we kind of wanted to understand how both of those factors would influence how people viewed those drugs and if they wanted to take those drugs. And so we found that by prominently including those adverse severe effects, as you might expect, there was an association with consumers perceiving those drugs as riskier, and they were also less likely to want to ask their physician about the drug or consider using the drug. I think this just has implications in terms of thinking through whether the FDA should consider requiring that these severe adverse effects listed in the black box warning be prominently displayed in these ads. So that was something that we thought could potentially be considered in the future.
Awesome. Yeah, it's really interesting to see kind of what happens in the market with other drugs and kind of how that spurs research and data and all that. It's really awesome to see. So I'm glad you mentioned a specific Alzheimer's drug. I wanted to move over to another specific medication. So for GLP-1 medication specifically, research has shown that advertisers significantly misinform consumers about safety and efficacy of compounded GLP-1 since they have been in shortage recently. With such popular drugs like these, how does advertising tend to differ when compared with other medications for smaller patient populations?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it's, we see these drugs advertised all the time in recent years. And so it's something that's constantly evolving. And so I think there's always a need for more research out in terms of how this will continue to evolve in the future. But already, I think we've seen the greatest increases in advertising of certain drugs that are to treat diabetes and endocrine conditions. And so I think that one of the things that might be a difference between advertising for those and other drugs is that if they're targeting a prevalent condition like obesity, it seems to be perhaps a majority TV advertising that has broader reach, which for rare conditions, there might be more advertising that might be more targeted outreach on social media and things like that. That's not always true, but I think just in terms of a general trend, there might be different targeted forms of this advertising based on those different types of drugs. But I think more research is always needed to really understand those differences. But I think just different strategies are used overall.
For sure, yeah. I think this has been a great conversation. It's really interesting to see kind of see how this is evolving right now, and obviously it's going to be evolving in the future. But I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Yeah, thank you. This was a great conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you.